This is Wade's World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, the voice of the people program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kbf.org, wamf.org, or acornradio.org. A podcast will be available of this show on those websites and at www.chieforganizer.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to Maggie Combs, who is the New Orleans area manager for something called Core Response. Welcome to Wade's World, Maggie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, because we're going to explain to people what Core Response does, but it is right there in the, you know, we read in the daily news all about testing for COVID-19, and that's part of what you're doing, is what you're doing. So tell us what it's like to run a testing center on COVID-19 these days.
Sure. So testing looks very different from state to state and within Louisiana, parish to parish. In New Orleans, we are surprisingly lucky to have quite a few resources in this regard. Both the city and state has focused quite a bit of attention on access to testing for New Orleans residents. So CORE Response, which stands for Community Organized Relief Efforts, is actually a national organization that is staffing and operating testing sites in several cities throughout the United States, most of which were hotspots in the initial pandemic surge. So in New Orleans, what that looks like is CORE partnering with the New Orleans Health Department to identify testing sites and populations that are particularly hard to reach or are particularly vulnerable or at high risk of infection or spreading infection. So we're kind of one arm of a multi-pronged approach by the city to make low and no barrier testing available to residents. We, for the most part, focus on folks who fall into high-risk categories, such as seniors, people who are unsheltered, low-income families, and folks living in any number of congregate living facilities. But we also run sites that are completely open to the public. Anyone who wants to come can get tested on that day if we have not yet run out of tests, which has been happening more and more frequently.
Well, tell us more about that, because we read that, you know, the White House says we're just drowning in tests, but over and over again, we read in the newspapers, whether it's in New Orleans or Baton Rouge or whatever else, that either we're running out of reagents or we don't have enough tests, or there's a line of thousands within 5 minutes. I mean, I think I read that the city of New Orleans one Saturday had to shut down within 5 minutes because they'd already run out. So what's up with all that? Where do your tests come from?
Sure. So the stories are true, definitely, especially the last few weeks as this next surge started up. I know that our site, we would call it at capacity about 15 minutes into testing, because we would have already had 250 people lined up an hour before we started.
Wow.
That was standard across all public sites being run by CORE, LCMC, and Ochsner. That has abated a little bit, but the demand is still extremely high. The question about kit shortage is something that I am also still trying to understand, and even after many conversations with city and state folks whose job it is to allocate these kits, I think everyone is trying to understand. And, not to pass the buck too far up the chain, but a lot of that is due to lack of communication or confusing communication from the federal level, as I'm sure you can imagine. My understanding is that when we talk about a shortage of testing kits, we're talking not necessarily about a general shortage of those supplies, but about a shortage of cohesive systems meaning that, you know, a test manufacturer being able to make a test available at a price that's affordable, that can then be administered, you know, by a city or state or NGO agency, and then the analysis for that sample and then the reporting. I think everyone's eyes are being opened to how complicated that process is. And so if there's any sort of break in the supply chain or the administration chain, it equals a shortage of testing being made available. It doesn't necessarily mean that we are short on the physical materials required to test people, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, we could probably spend another whole show on what that means. But
yes.
The point is, it's a systems breakdown, right?
Exactly. Yes.
And, you know, I know that I read, for example, in Baton Rouge and I think Jacksonville and some city in North Carolina, there had been a special federal effort to increase the level of testing. What was that about?
So as I understand it, because those are projects mounted really, you know, within a relationship between the federal government and the state governments, not
right.
privy to it, but seeing from the outside and working closely with those state agencies, they received a directive and resources to open up what are called surge sites to handle large numbers, you know, large volumes of people to be tested in areas that are experiencing surges of infections. So what that looks like in Baton Rouge was very rapidly, you know, after receiving a directive, the state receiving a directive and then rapidly setting up large-scale testing sites at places like Cortana Mall, Southern University, and trying to test as many folks as possible. I actually have heard that I believe that we actually have a few of those sites coming to New Orleans as well. So that's the story there. And, you know, in terms of systems that are set up, the state is doing, I actually think, an absolutely fantastic job of responding both to the need in the state and to these kinds, you know, these sort of out of the blue directives from the federal level. But it's very, very challenging. I mean, the one thing that we've really been acquainted with is how challenging the logistics are of delivering testing to people in a way that's safe and respects privacy and that is effective. And so, you know, having to set up a massive surge site, it's not an easy task for the state. But it's the service is needed. And there's a huge, huge appetite for it in New Orleans where we've had access to testing so people know how to use it. And are familiar with the process. So I'm hopefully that's a good thing for us, and it'll be a good thing for Baton Rouge.
Well, we're going to cross our fingers. We're talking to Maggie Combs, who is the area manager in New Orleans for CORE Response, which is doing testing. Now, a lot of people have been tested, but way more of our listeners have never been tested. Let's go through some of the procedures. I know there's oral and up the nose, so to speak. I'm sure that's not the medical term.
That works.
But, and I think, I know Ochsner, which is a local hospital chain system nonprofit in New Orleans, it's up the nose, but I think what CORE Response is doing is oral, right? Swab in the mouth. How does it all work?
Exactly. So, to my understanding, there are three types of tests, and I'll be frank, I don't know all the lingo. I'm not a public health person. I'm a logistics person.
Well, up the nose works,
so,
right? So
yeah.
We'll just, yeah.
There's actually two different up the nose. There's
oh,
the,
wow, okay.
There's the sort of in what was called an invasive nasal swab, meaning that goes far into the nasal cavity. Which
yes,
is
that's
the one
what
that
I've
heard.
Had.
Yeah, that where people, it's very uncomfortable.
They warn you that you may start crying, your eyes may water, and
they
have a stick about, you know, as long as a chopstick that goes up your nose. It's about, you know, from your elbow. Anyway, I don't want to share personal experiences about you, Maggie, and the CORE Response, but okay, so there's an invasive one. I know what that one's like, and is there a less invasive up the nose?
So you had the worst of it. And then there's a non-invasive or less invasive nasal swab where I think you go about 2 inches into your nose, which, you know, can make you sneeze. And is uncomfortable depending on their, you know, discomfort threshold. And then what CORE, we're very popular because we have the least invasive kind of test with the same level of accuracy as a nasal swab, which is 97.5%. 8%. Let me, I'll double check that number, but the oral swab is the same level of accuracy as the nasal swab. And the way that we do it is that it's actually self-administered. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you come to a course site, you register, you give some just basic contact information, demographic information, if you are so inclined, it's all at your discretion. You're scanned into our system, and then our staff actually leads you through the self-administered oral swab, which just means basically taking something that's akin to a Q-tip and swabbing the roof of your mouth, bottom of your mouth, sides of your mouth for 20 seconds. And then we collect that sample, pack it away, and send it to the lab for analysis. So from, you know, once you get to the front of the line, it's about a minute-long process, very quick.
And how long does it take you to get results?
So we actually work with a lab called Curative Labs, which produces our tests and analyzes them and manages quite a bit of the report back system. That lab is located in San Dimas, California. So at the end of every day when we are finished testing, we overnight those samples to that lab. Once the lab receives them, those results come out very quickly, usually within 12 hours. So with travel time and lab work for folks here, people get their results anywhere between 2 to 5 days, depending upon the day of the week and what contact method they've chosen. People can receive their results via email or via phone, and email is typically a bit faster. So it depends on a few factors, but results are available to folks usually at about 3 days, like on average, pretty quick.
Now, some of what you hear and read, and these may be as much apocryphal and idiosyncratic as anything else, is that a lot of people sort of claim they got tested, they had symptoms, but, you know, they came back negative, and then a week later or 2 weeks later they tested, and then it was, I mean, when we talk about the accuracy of these tests, almost 98% or higher, that's not what you're hearing from some sources, is it?
Hmm. So, I mean, so for me personally, I have not interacted with folks who have that particular story very often.
Right.
Yeah, which is good, but, you know, but also that's important, you know, that's important to know. Not being a biologist or an MD, I can't speak to that, you know, in a super thorough way.
Well, let's just talk about the experience people have. Do most people come because they feel like they're symptoms, or they come because they're afraid and want to be tested? I mean, what do you see come through the door when your crowd is there within 15 minutes every day?
Yeah, truly all different types of reasons. We have people who come and get tested every 2 weeks, no matter what. You know, they're like,
oh, wow, it's like a regular part of their schedule, huh?
Yes, absolutely. And that might just be for their own peace of mind, or that might be because they live in a household with family or with roommates, and that's a part of their, you know, sort of household health agreement. We have a lot of folks who come and get tested regularly as a matter of employment. They're either sort of, you know, required or tacitly required to be tested, which is its own, also we could do an entire other podcast on that, or radio show on that.
Does that show up mainly for essential workers, or mainly grocery or healthcare workers, or where do you see that flow?
We see more folks who are employed in fields where they don't have access to health insurance, right, because we have our testing requires absolutely nothing but to show up. So we see quite a few people who work in the service and hospitality industry all throughout it. You know, bartenders, valets, cleaners. I mean, everybody. We also, CORE has mounted a very clear kind of campaign to make the folks with unclear, you know, immigration status or folks who are undocumented feel comfortable coming to our sites because of our data privacy and the fact that we operate separately from government agencies. To be clear, all of the testing sites that are low and no barrier sites offered by Ochsner and LCMC are all equally as safe, but we've really put the word out to bring all different kinds of workers who don't have access to quality health care to our sites, so we also have a lot of folks who fit that profile come through.
how do people even know that you're going to be tested at a certain location? Or, you know, if I'm tested tomorrow, and how do you let people know that? Is it?
Yeah. So it's different for CORE in each of its cities. In New Orleans, we are very lucky because we have a pretty effective unified notification system through NOLA Ready. So all low and no barrier testing sites that are available on any given day are posted on ready.nola.gov. That is actually the most up-to-date calendar, even more so than our CORE calendars, because our CORE communications materials are all on a national level. But we have this really nice localized communication system, so that's where we always direct people. Because also, if one of our sites hits capacity or has to be closed one day, you can always find a site to be tested for free in New Orleans Monday through Friday, and often on Saturdays, which is pretty great. So all of those sites are available there.
Where else is CORE Response doing testing now?
Sure. So CORE is working in L.A. on a pretty grand scale. I think they're testing like 7,000 to 8,000 people a day.
Whoa!
Yeah, and then also they're rapidly expanding in Atlanta. CORE partnered with Fulton County and is essentially a new arm of testing and COVID response kind of healthcare in that area. So they've got a huge, I don't know the numbers for how many folks they're testing a day, but it's a lot. There's also a small testing operation in Washington, D.C., in New York, in Chicago, in Northern California. I do not remember exactly which locations. And then also, interestingly, in Navajo Nation. And their CORE is acting more in a supportive role to make testing available, but also to set up systems for folks who test positive. To be able to find, to have living situations and resources to turn to if they need to quarantine away from their families. So CORE is at work across the country at this point.
Now, what's the backstory on CORE Response? I mean, this is a big operation, and you say a lot of people are using it who aren't insured. So how are you paying for all this, or who's paying for all this? Is this part of the CARES Act? I mean, are you all being funded in some way by the stimulus money, or where's it all coming from?
Great question, Wade, and this is the part that's the most vague and in the middle of transition, so it might be kind of hard to speak to, but CORE is primarily supported by philanthropic dollars. It was started in Haiti by the actor Sean Penn, after the earthquakes there. So it's been operating as a humanitarian, an international humanitarian aid organization since then. I am not aware of what the funding structure has been for those projects, but for COVID response, it's primarily been funded by large foundations, including the Rockefeller Foundation. There's a whole list of funders beyond that. As of right now, it is a solidly philanthropic operation, as I believe the only city that has partnered financially has been Atlanta. So that's obviously not sustainable long term, and something, I think CORE is looking for ways to make the work stretch out longer because the need is obviously there. So getting involved with the CARES Act, plugging into existing city and state health infrastructure, all of that is on the table to figure out, models that work for different kinds of governments and different kinds of municipalities. So that we're smack in the middle of figuring that out.
Gotcha. So we're talking to Maggie Combs, who's the area manager for CORE Response, which we're finding out more and more about. But the key is that it's a testing, it runs a testing center or centers for COVID-19, which is something we all are involved with. Now, when people show up, Maggie, are they masked up? I mean, are they calm and ready for action? Or you said that the line is there when you all sort of open up, wherever it might be. People are finding it out by a website. And so what's that? What's the actual experience?
So the experience, I'm happy to say, I think has improved drastically over the last couple of months as we've gotten better at what we do. So we can kind of start with what the general flow for a patient is, which is that You find out that the site is happening either through NOLA Ready or through a text message or through your local church or community-based organization as a result of outreach efforts by CORE as well as NOHD and the Office of Community Engagement. You show up at one of our sites. You take a look at the line, decide if you're going to stick around, and then you get in line. And the first person that you would likely interact with is one of our staff members who's walking up and down the line, checking in with folks to see how people are doing with the heat. We hand out water. We closely monitor the line for signs of overheating so that we can move them to a cooler area or arrange, you know, some kind of situation that allows them to get tested while staying safe. We also monitor the line to find folks who might need some additional assistance in getting tested, whether that's because of a physical limitation, that they do not speak English fluently, or that they might have hearing or speech impairment that would make the process more difficult, so that we can plan to accommodate whatever their needs are. And so you wait in line. Again, this has improved drastically. We are now to the point where we can move about 120 people through testing per hour, which is very fast, and we're very proud of that. And we're able to do so while still offering an experience that feels warm and compassionate and professional and thorough. But, you know, the idea is to decrease people's wait time so that their exposure time is limited. And we do require that folks who are waiting in line and folks who come through the site are wearing masks, which we will provide. So we've had very, very little issue with that.
How do you protect your team?
Oh, that's our number one. That's what we spend most of our time figuring out. So our team, core standards of safe of on-site safety are very high. Our team wears full PPE or close to full PPE, regardless of their role. So we're talking N95 respirators covered by a surgical mask with a face shield, wearing gloves. And if this is staff, we're actually leading folks through the oral swab testing. They're wearing surgical gowns. So we really pay a ton of attention to protecting our staff. That's our number one priority while they're working on site. And we also have we're very, very vigilant about heat and heat exhaustion because infection is not the only safety issue on site. So that's what we spend the majority of our time thinking about, and thus far it's been successful. We have a pretty happy...
It's a very anonymous system. There was a picture in the New Orleans Advocate, Times-Picayune, that supposedly I might have been able to pick you and others out in the picture, but I was clueless. I mean,
yeah.
I heard it on good authority. You were actually pictured in the paper, but... if a gun was put to my head, I wouldn't have been able to testify. So you've had no bad experiences then?
We haven't had any bad experiences that we haven't been able to mitigate or respond to. I think, as everyone knows, folks have a hard time. Folks can be experiencing any number of pressures, during the best of times, and COVID has exacerbated those things, So we have folks come through who are physically unwell. We have folks come through who are mentally unwell. These things happen. We have plans in place and ways to respond to really help people who are in any number of situations get through testing and to make sure that our staff are safe. And thus far, we really have not had anything particularly difficult happen.
This may be, past all of our pay grade, but does CORE Response imagine that it'll be doing these kind of testing sites for the next 6 months, for years? I mean, how do you make a plan at this point? No one seems to know, elbow to head knot or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Great question. I think we all have that question. CORE is fundamentally committed to building upon the experience and expertise that's been developed over the last several months around the logistics of this pandemic. Committed to continuing to apply that. I think, like we mentioned before, figuring out funding is a big challenge, and figuring out funding, really at the highest level, at the state level, because everyone, the states are all kind of figuring out their own response efforts. So,
well, and of course, that's exactly part of the debate right now in Congress on this latest stimulus effort, is that surprisingly there's been a lot of pushback from administration and other sources against having some of the stimulus money used for testing and tracing.
Yes.
Which is, you know, so it seems unbelievable given the conversation we're having. I mean, we seem to be working to overflow capacity in city after city and town after town all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a lot of sides of that debate. Testing for the sake of testing is not the answer, but removing testing is most certainly not the answer, in my opinion. I think, you know, if states are interested in distributing resources among testing as well as patient, you know, patient-resident education and engagement, supportive services that will allow people to quarantine when they need to, that policies protect workers when they need to stay home from work in order to not spread infection. Redistributing those resources amongst those efforts, in my mind, are the best approach to making a dent in this, but removing resources from testing and this kind of response in general seems unwise given the situation we find ourselves in.
Certainly in Arkansas, you know, we're hitting daily records. In Louisiana, we're coming back to that level. And so we keep thinking that we keep hoping, we're all sick of this pandemic. Let's be frank about it. We just want to never hear what does COVID stand for? We don't even want to know anymore. I found myself reading, something from the New Yorker to my partner this morning that tried to make some jokes out of, you know, language around COVID, your COVID 30, your COVID 15, whatever. we've been talking to Maggie Kalmus, who's the Louisiana area, New Orleans manager for Core Response. How would people find out more about Core Response if they had questions or hear this show elsewhere in the country?
Yes, so we have a great website. It's coreresponse.org. You can visit that website to see everything you would ever want to know about the way that the organization is responding to COVID, as well as the history of its activities around the world. And there is a New Orleans-specific page there where you can zoom in on our activities here. And for folks who are interested in finding testing schedules in the New Orleans area, I would send them to ready.nola.gov, to the testing part of that website, to find the testing calendar.
Ready.nola.gov.
You got it.
You've definitely supported that. It sounds like a winner.
It's a winner.
Because I know, once again, on the home front, somebody was looking on a website trying to find out where you might be or where the site might be, and if they'd just known about that. Thank you, Maggie, and I hope it gets better. Thanks for all of you who are interested in testing. Now you know how it all goes. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. Wade's World is underwritten by the Darrow Foundation, a progressive force enabling change based in Little Rock, Arkansas, and as the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio this week when we'll have another guest. This is Wade Rafke for Wade's World. Thank you.